This is URN Sport.
See the match?
Which one?
Dunno.
They certainly should be up there with one of the best Premier League teams of all time.
There are two truly elite players in the Premier League that I genuinely think are a class above the rest.
When it comes to the Euros next year, he should be in there and possibly given the number 9 shirt.
He was right up there in terms of actual shot stopping and then the ability he gives you the ball at his feet.
Throughout all of 2020, I think it took him until, basically the last game week pre-restart to get a goal contribution. He was appalling.
For the most part of the season, he's been an incredible replacement.
When people look back at the season, you have like the little montages of big moments. That will definitely be one.
Hello and welcome to, I think we're going to call this, URN Sports End of Season Awards. The Premier League wrapped up, I think it's nearly 2 weeks ago now. It feels like a lifetime ago that football stopped. And we're here, the URN Sport team, to talk through the season and come with our kind of awards for the end of it, really. We've got a manager of the season up for grabs. We've got a moment of the season, goals of the season, and we've also got the team of the season, which naturally always causes a little bit of debate here on URN Sport. Delighted to say that Benji, Alex, Reese, and Will are joining me today for this podcast. I'm going to head to Will first, actually, to discuss the idea of manager of the season. Now, last season, I'm sure you would have thrown Neil Warnock's name into the ring for that award. Who do you think is the standout candidate in the Premier League for manager of the season this year?
Yeah, I mean, you're lucky it's not Championship, otherwise Neil Harris would be having a shout. But yeah, there's been a lot of good manager performances. I was having a little toss-up between, Chris Wilder has obviously had a lot of plaudits with Sheffield United. But I've gone for Sean Dyche. I think it's a 14-point improvement on last season to get 54 points into 10th place with Burnley. And the thing I love with Dyche is, they don't really seem to sign anyone new at the start of the season. It seems to be that same 11 kind of every game, every season, and he's just continuing to get the best out of them. They always kind of have a little dip maybe at the start of the season or midway through, and you think, is they being found out with their kind of similar style of play? But he always seems to get a kind of performance out of them or a lift and kind of stabilising them. And I think he finished in, I think it's 10th place this season,
yeah,
which
10th place.
Is a really good return for a team of Burnley size. And you got to be wondering if he'll ever get a chance at a bigger club, because he's definitely, it's impossible really to go further with that Burnley side. I mean, he got into Europe a couple of seasons ago. But with the continuing spending of the other big clubs, I know he's not happy with the owners and the board with their kind of management of the club. So whether he'll be there for much longer, I don't know. But he's definitely my shout, as especially how he's brought them, when he got relegated, then brought them back up and kind of cemented them as a Premier League side.
I think Dyche is a really good shout, Will, because, the league table, because mid-table has kind of not a great deal has kind of taken place in that department in the Premier League, so especially since lockdown, in that it kind of focus has been on the top four and the relegation battle. But Burnley have done incredibly well, because I remember being sat in the studios at the start of the year and we were talking about Burnley potentially being relegated because they'd started so poorly. But to finish in 10th place, it was an incredible effort by Sean Dyche's side. Benji, who would you kind of say is your manager of the season candidate?
Okay,
who stands out for you?
I like Will's point about Dyche, but it's between two, Klopp and Wilder. I'll first talk about Klopp, because I think, although Liverpool did get 18 points out of 27, I mean, they won the league with 7 games to go, and they broke so many records that that season. They certainly should be up there with one of the best Premier League teams of all time. So efficient, and they've been the best by a mile. And a lot of teams would have dropped their heads to finish with 97 points the season before and not win the title, which is like the biggest points total for a second place team. And yeah, I'm in admiration for Liverpool's achievement. With Wilder, Sheffield United didn't spend much, if I remember, and they've a lot of their players you would have considered as championship quality before the season. And Wilder's like unique style of management, overlapping centre backs, and his tactics have been really hard to deal with for a lot of the big teams. And it's a shame Sheffield United didn't get into the Europa League places, which was a bit of a letdown. But to finish in the top half of the table in their first season back is an amazing achievement.
So if I had to push you, Benji, would you go Wilder or Klopp?
I'll have to go with Klopp, just because, you know, it's an unbelievable achievement.
Okay, Reece, would you say, I think those two managers, Chris Wilder and Jurgen Klopp, are going to be the two that come up in conversation probably the most. Will's shout of Sean Dyche is a good one, but I think Wilder and Klopp are going to be the two that we hear the most about. Are those two the managers that have kind of stood out for you? And if so, who comes out on top there?
Yeah, obviously both have done unbelievable jobs this season. I think personally I'll give it to Wilder, just because, you know, we sort of expected Klopp's team to do well, maybe not as well as that. You know, it's quite incredible. But yeah, Wilder's achievements with that Sheffield United team, you know, they've been pushing for Europe all season. No worries about relegation at all. He's done an amazing job. You know, he's managed them from League One up into the top half of the Premier League. It's actually quite incredible. For the sake of variety, you know, and another name to throw in as an honourable mention, Graham Potter of Brighton. You know, they didn't have to really worry about relegation too much. And it was a bit of a risk getting rid of Houghton, you know, with their agricultural style. They were, you know, always touted as a relegation candidate, but Potter's taken him to, you know, not too much higher, but he's got them playing nicer football and relegation wasn't a worry. So maybe they could establish themselves as a Premier League team for a few years to come.
Yeah, I think the argument about Graham Potter is a good one, in the sense that I think he's definitely put foundations in place that can let Brighton, you know, move on next season and go places. Well, they'll be hoping so anyway. Alex, I can kind of predict which manager you're going to go for, but why do you think Jurgen Klopp is worthy of the Manager of the Season award?
I mean, obviously, like, I do have a bias, but even trying to think about this objectively, I have to lean towards Klopp. I mean, it's very tired Liverpool fans talking about how great Klopp is. And I think what I say, I don't know how much I can add to that conversation, but, you know, we came so close last season and basically would have won a title in pretty much any other context, with the exception of City's Centurion win, 97 points. And I just think, you know, to improve on that, is a real achievement. And what this season's shown with Klopp is that there are a lot of doubts about his ability in 17-18. I remember when our assistant manager Zeljko Buvac left, a lot of people labelled Buvac as the brains and didn't know how Klopp would operate without Buvac. But Klopp's just matured over the last couple of years incredibly, as we've transitioned from heavy metal football into a really balanced, really adaptable style of play. And I've just been so proud of us this season. But other than Klopp, I think someone else that deserves a mention, certainly not for objectively to be the manager of the season, but I think Ralf Hasenhüttl certainly deserves a lot of respect this season. I mean, Southampton have basically, I really tipped them to go down at the start of the season. I thought, you know, they kind of expired as a team, as we'd seen with sort of Swansea a couple of years ago, with Bournemouth this season. I just think Hasenhüttl, to come from, everyone talks about the 9-0, which is a bit unfair on Southampton, to be honest. But to come from that and develop a side that looked pretty destined for relegation into a side that looks like it can compete for the top 10 and even the Europa League next season, and to get the best out of Danny Ings, who I think is a criminally underrated player, I have a lot of respect for Hasenhüttl. And I think the next couple of years, I think bigger jobs will probably come for him.
Yeah, he was definitely going to be the name that I was going to throw into the mix just because of the way he has turned that Southampton side around. And, you know, the likes of Ings, Che Adams has really come into good form during the lockdown period. They've been arguably one of the most impressive sides since Premier League football returned. So I think his name deserves to be mentioned. So we've got, thus far, two votes for Klopp, one vote for Chris Wilder and one vote for Sean Dyche. Callum, out of those three names, does one stand out? And if not, other than Eddie Howe, who would you kind of throw into the conversation?
I mean, I was going to say Ralph Hasenhüttl because once he just sort of went, sod it, I'm going to go with my style of football. They were one of the best. They were probably the best of the rest. Outside of that top sort of four, five, six, whatever you want to call it at this point. They were the best of the rest after he sort of, yeah, went, sod it, we're going to do it my way, live and die by my sword, that kind of thing. And yeah, they were really good. And it's a really, I won't call it innovative because it spread to a degree, but that 4-2-2-2 worked really well. And it was, they were good money for it. It wasn't like, oh, they had a few performances that went their way. They deserve to be, yeah, one of the best of the rest. So Hasenhüttl is where I'd go with that, but that doesn't really help here. So it's two each for Klopp and two.
Two for Klopp, one for Wilder and one for Dyche. So you can either give Klopp the crown or you can take us into deadlock with a vote for Chris Wilder.
I'd say Chris Wilder out of those three because, yeah, it was a lot of players who weren't recognised. There were a lot of them who were Premier League quality. It's just if you're not in the Premier League, you don't get recognised as that. It's always really a lot of them would have got onto a lot of sides. You had John Fleck, of course, who was being talked about with moves to top of the table clubs in England a decade ago when he broke through as a kid. So it's guys like that where it's they didn't get the respect they deserved coming up as players. So they were Premier League quality, but they weren't given that recognition. But they did so well this season because everyone knew exactly what they were doing, which is the mark of manager.
Yeah, definitely. I think we have had a change of vote from one of the panel. I think Will, who went for Sean Dyche initially, has changed his mind to Chris Wilder. So in terms of maths, that means Chris Wilder has come out on top. Can I also throw another name into the bracket? Now, I don't believe this to be true, but I'm just suggesting this manager for the sake of it. What do people think about the shout of David Moyes for keeping West Ham up and the signings that he made in January, the likes of Bowen and Suchek? Are they some, you know, should he be considered perhaps in the conversation?
I mean, no.
You're saying no for that. Okay. Okay. So in our Declan Boardman, by the way, has just joined us, everybody. Chris Wilder comes out on top for our manager of the season.
Well, that's wrong because I was about to say Jurgen Klopp. So
you were, but we'll go to you first for this next one, Dec, because our next category, because I think Liverpool have plenty of these this season. This is moment of the season. Now, there's quite a lot to choose from here. A couple of examples that I came up with were Norwich City beating Manchester City at the start of the season, 3-2 at Carrow Road, and what was a great game. You've got, you know, kind of a euphoric moment, perhaps, was when Mohamed Salah scored against Man United for Liverpool and the supporters were singing, "We're going to win the league." That was in late January of 2020. You also had Scott McTominay scoring from just over the halfway line for Man United against Manchester City in the Manchester Derby at Old Trafford. Dec, which moment for you kind of stands out as the best in the Premier League this season?
I would say it's interesting because I was thinking about the Manchester United one, but earlier on in the season was probably the most important result when it came to Liverpool's campaign. And it was, you have the Aston Villa game that was away at Villa Park. And then only a week later, we played against Manchester City and beating Manchester City made that Liverpool were then 9 points clear at the top of the Premier League. Which at that point seems almost insurmountable. You know, Manchester City were losing very, very poor games. Like you said, the Norwich City game that they played at Carrow Road. So I would have to go for the Liverpool-Manchester City game at Anfield because that game just seemed as if all of it was in Liverpool's hands then. It seemed as if the only way that they were going to lose the title was going to be through some absolutely bottling circumstances, which myself and some of the Liverpool supporters who were from your end sport probably did think they're still on the cards, maybe. But
it did seem as if the stuff that Liverpool were doing at that time and the football they were playing, more importantly, in that game was so, so good that it was going to take a monumental effort from Manchester City to catch them up. So I'd have to go for that game for me.
And we're going to talk about goal of the season in a moment. And I think Fabinho's strike in that game could certainly be in the conversation for that. It was a brilliant goal. Will, we're going to turn for you next. What would you say has been your moment of the season in the Premier League this year?
My moment is not one you mentioned, but it's kind of a very big moment. It was when, obviously, the return of football. That after that long wait due to the corona, everyone was saying whether the null and void debates, all sorts of suggestions about what was going to happen with the season. And it returned when we kind of need it. I mean, people were going crazy. And just to get a football on pretty much every day of the week was very much needed. And to top it off, having that Sheffield United-Villa game with the goal line technology shambles that might have been the thing that kept Villa up in the in the end, because if I'm honest, we were waiting for that return. The game was probably one of the worst games I've ever seen. But that moment alone with the goal line technology, that's going to be when people look back at the season, you have like the little montages of big moments. I think that image of the keeper holding the ball behind his own post will definitely be one to see it. And obviously the return with the Black Lives Matter thing on the back, and the kneeling as well, was a big symbol of the kind of return to football.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because I think I speak on behalf of quite a lot of people here when you say psychologically to have football back, it was a massive boost in what's been a really difficult time. And you talk about that Villa versus Sheffield United incident. Technically, that did relegate Bournemouth and Watford will make a case for the fact that moment relegated them from the Premier League. So definitely a huge and significant moment that. Benji, what about you? What stands out other than Mikel Arteta's arrival?
There's three big moments that stand out for me this season. So I'll go with, firstly, I'll say the Southampton-Leicester game, the 9-0. I mean, I've never seen it in my lifetime. A home team just get absolutely destroyed. And Leicester didn't take their foot off the gas. And then Southampton's turnaround after that, when everyone said they'd get relegated, as Callum mentioned, Hassan Hüttl did a great job. I'm also going to talk about the Xhaka throwing his shirt on the floor and the captaincy being stripped off him. It sort of symboled that Emery had lost the players. He'd lost the dressing room, and he threw Xhaka under the bus. He stripped him off the captaincy. And Xhaka's turnaround, he's been one of the best players in the Arteta system ever since then. And that all the hate and abuse that had been sadly directed towards him, and he'd just had enough. And yeah, everyone thought it was over for him. And my other moment will be, this one will make you happy, James, is the Watford 3, Liverpool 0 one, because that preserved my invincibles. And and it was a hilarious sight to see, and I enjoyed every minute of it.
Reece, what about you? Which moments kind of stand out for you this season?
I've sort of got a tie in with what Dec was saying. He mentioned when Liverpool beat Man City at Anfield in the first half of the season, and that gave Liverpool a huge lead already. But more specifically in that game, I remember Pep Guardiola absolutely losing his mind. Twice. And then going up and, shaking Michael Oliver and the rest of the referee and, officiating team's hands at the end of the game, really sarcastic, like, good job, good job. I just think that was the beginning of the end of Manchester City's title challenge as, Liverpool went on to absolutely canter the Premier League. I remember just seeing it and thinking, geez, has Pep actually lost the plot here? Some refereeing decisions did go against him that day, but the way that he reacted, it just made you look and think, I think this is Liverpool's season.
Because Guardiola is someone who at his previous clubs has got a bit of a reputation for at times being quite rattled. But at Manchester City, he had been this kind of calm and collected presence on the touchline. That was the first real time where it seemed that he lost it, really. And I think, yeah, you know, if the 9 points clear Liverpool were at that point, but psychologically it felt like they got the better of Manchester City at that point. Alex, do you kind of support those two ideas that Liverpool win over Man City is the best moment of the season? Or have you got another one to throw into the mix?
Absolutely. Like, I really enjoyed, obviously, that victory over Man City. I mean, the two games that came to mind for me, well, firstly, for different reasons, really. The first one was the 4-0 win over Leicester on Boxing Day, which seems like ages ago. That seemed like the kind of the title match at one point because Leicester were doing really well. City were pretty much out of it at that point, so Leicester seemed like more of a genuine threat. And ultimately, I think that was probably Trent Alexander-Arnold's best ever game in a Liverpool shirt. I've never seen him play that well. Scored one goal, set up two, was absolutely integral to everything we did. And it was just such a comfortable win. And that's when I personally really thought, you know, we could... as Deck will know, you know, Liverpool fans were very conscious of bottling because it's happened a couple of times before. But at that point, I really thought, you know, we can actually go on and do something here. And the other game that came to mind was actually the 5-2 against Everton. You know, the games against United and Everton, they always mean a bit more. And it was just, James, it was just such a comfortable win, to be honest. You know, we started a weaker team. It was, you know, Origi, Lallana, Lovren, these players came in and they were just really, really impressive. So probably one of those two.
Well, Alex is on mute for the rest of the meeting. Let's turn now. Callum, we're going to turn to you, mate, for what would you say your moment of the season is?
Well, I mean, I thought it was singular moments was what I was thinking of. So with that, it would be Pep going twice. And it's what I was doing though, sort of, I'd say probably three that I was trying to treat to, where it's that you had Nealand holding the ball over the line, not being given. And then a bit of personal one, you got John Fleck scoring for the first time in the Premier League, which is one where it's a guy whose career I've been involved with for over a decade since he came through Rangers and he left when everything went sideways there. So it's a guy whose career has been a thing for me for so long. So seeing him finally get where he should be, he always should have been there. He was getting linked with clubs like Arsenal at that point. So seeing that probably happen was the personal one there. But yeah, it would probably be Pep or Nealand because of how consequential those were in terms of once Pep did that, you never really felt the same about City's chances of winning. And then Nealand possibly sending Bournemouth down.
Yeah, yeah, both massive moments. But I think Liverpool's win against Manchester City comes out on top there. A huge game for multiple reasons. And yeah, it's produced one of the best memes of the season in what Pep Guardiola got up to on the touchline that day. Okay, so the next category that we're going to move on to now is goals of the season. Now, there's been quite a few stunners, really, in the Premier League this season, especially Fabinho against Manchester City, for example. You've got Danny Welbeck's overhead kick against Norwich the other week was a good goal. Tomori against Wolves, and then you've got the likes of Kevin De Bruyne, who scored some absolute belters, including goals away at Newcastle and away at Arsenal. Reece, which goal this season do you think stands out for you as the best you've seen?
Well, I'm going to go for what I voted for on the match of the day goal of the season thing they did, you know, on the last episode. And I actually voted for Johan Bash's overhead kick against Chelsea for Brighton. I've been really giving Brighton a lot of love, I've just realised. But yeah, I just thought it was a really good goal. And it was like the emotion he showed as well after he scored it, because that was his first ever goal in English football. And what a goal it was. And it was a long time ago, but I'm pretty sure Brighton won that day as well. So, yeah, sort of, you know, a big result for them and a big goal. Yeah, so that or Son's, but because I hate Tottenham, I'm going to go for Johan Bash.
But Brighton beat us twice this season. You can't give Brighton awards.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I'd forgotten how good that goal was, actually. Yeah, Johan Bash against Chelsea is Reece's shout. Will, who stands out for you for goal of the season this year?
For me, I mean, it's not one that I don't think it was actually on that match today vote, because they only did like the goal of the months put together. But I don't know if you'll remember, it was Jordan Ayew against West Ham.
Oh, that's a good goal.
Last minute of the game, obviously London derby, and he just cuts in from the right, does a roulette, then a little shimmy to get past two, and then the cool, like the calmness to then chip the keeper was just a brilliant, brilliant goal. And especially for a kind of smaller side like Palace to have a goal of individual quality like that in the last minute, in a big moment, and especially in front of the Selhurst Park crowd, the crowd went absolutely mad, is my pick. Because, I mean, there are a lot of good... I love De Bruyne's volley against Newcastle. But I just feel with those kind of long ranges, they kind of happen more often. You know, anyone can have a... Not lucky, but, you know, if you have enough shots, one of them will get a fly in. But to have that ability to then go through all those West Ham players and chip the keeper is my pick.
Callum, what about you? What goal stands out for you this season?
I would have to say that Joe Nau goal, because I love a chip. Watching Francesco Totti for so long, I love a chip. It's, well, because, yeah, it's like, what's it, where those sort of bangers, you get a few of them every season, and they come from, even though Kevin De Bruyne is a different level, you get them from, you know, this, that, and the other guys. But that chip takes that little bit more quality touch, and then having to beat a goal player takes a bit more quality of that touch. So it's the technical quality, as opposed to, yeah, he just hit really hard or Son, where it was really good, but basically he ran really far with the ball. It's that more technical requirement that means, yeah. And of course, I have to give it Son for South London, so John Nau.
Yeah, the more I think about that goal and I'm playing it back in my head, the more I realise what a brilliant individual strike it was. Deck, what goal for you? Because as a Liverpool fan, you've got plenty to choose from, five of which came against Everton.
Well, it's funny because everyone's been saying about how they like all these technical goals, and they've been saying that the long shots are not the ones that they go for, and the De Bruyne goal against Newcastle is not really their fantasy. And that's my goal of the season, because I just think technique, to be able to hit it on the volley in the way that he does in a game where they didn't play particularly well either, Manchester City. I thought that it was such great technique and such what seemed like a very important goal. And then John Joe Shelby goes up the other end and scores a very good goal also. But I have been raised on a steady diet of Steven Gerrard and Xabi Alonso raggers from like 30 yards out. So I've got to go for something like that. And I think De Bruyne... we'll consider why he could be in the contention for player of the season, because when he scores goals like that, you've got to know that he's, if we're talking about transfer fees these days, he's got to be up there in the upper echelons of £200 million, because goals like that are almost priceless.
Yeah, definitely. Certainly someone that we're going to be talking about in a little bit more detail later on, Kevin De Bruyne, and that goal against Newcastle is of top quality as well. Benji, what goal stands out for you?
Well, it's the closest they'll come to a trophy all season. I'm going to give it to Tottenham Hotspur and Son Heung-min. I mean, to run past the Burnley defence, and I mean, it was just unbelievable. Ran about 70, 80 metres, and like great dribbling. He's my favourite Spurs player. I've always admired him and accepted that he's amazing. And this Burnley defence are not a joke as well. They might have lost that game 5-0, but they've done very well across the season. So he was going around great players. I'm going to give it to Son.
So Son wins it for Benji there. Alex, you've got the final say. What goal of the season, you know, what are you going to go for in that category?
I don't know if anyone said it yet. It's been discussed, but it's got to be the Tomori goal against Wolves. I just absolutely love the technique. And, you know, from an unexpected player as well, a centre-back, to be able to do that. But I agree with De Bruyne's strike against Newcastle was better. But to be honest, I think a lot of respect has to go to Jonjo Shelvey scoring that really good goal at the other end as well. Overall, I'd have to give it to Tomori. I believe his goal wasn't even nominated for the Match of the Day award. I don't think he was even in the top 10, which I think is absolutely crazy. But I think Son's won overall, but I'd have to give it to Tomori. It was an unbelievable strike.
It was a great goal, that, from a centre-back, especially when Chelsea were really finding their feet at the start of the season. But if we do the maths, Jordan Ayew's goal versus West Ham United wins our goal of the season award. So we've had three categories so far. We've had manager of the season, which has been won by Chris Wilder. Moment of the season was Liverpool's win against Manchester City. And the goal of the season goes to Jordan Ayew versus West Ham. When we come back, we're going to be talking about player of the season and we'll also do our best 11. Okay, so now it's time to discuss the player of the season in the Premier League this year. Lots of names have been thrown into the mix. You've got the likes of Kevin De Bruyne, Sadio Mane, Virgil van Dijk. Plenty of players in the discussion for this one. Dec, I'm going to turn to you first. I'm going to pose a name to you. Someone who's been an integral part of this team this season. A great player. Henderson has been absolutely superb. So my question for you is, just how good has Sheffield United's goalkeeper been?
All right, okay. So, listen, Jordan Henderson's going to be overlooked when it comes to this award for me, because I just think when it comes to player of the season, you've got to look at talent, and you've also got to look at the ability and also what they've put out on the pitch and how it's made the team work. Now, Jordan Henderson definitely fits the last criteria very, very well. Because without him, I do think that Liverpool do struggle to get some of their play going, especially because of the way that they transition from defence to attack. It's very important that Jordan Henderson's in there. But I was talking with one of my friends about this while I've been back in Liverpool. And whenever I see Manchester City not field Kevin De Bruyne, It almost seems like a completely different team. It's almost as if with a team of world-class players, he's the one that stands out the most. And more so this season has he stood out more than any other season he's been at Manchester City. The amount of assists that he's got has been incredible. I think he's one of the best crossers of the ball in the history of the Premier League. I don't think many people would argue with that here on this call. I think that there are very few players this season who have really stood out in the way that he's done, and the goals that he's got has been so important. And without Kevin De Bruyne, that they probably would have struggled a lot more this season, Manchester City, than they already have done. I mean, you see the points tally that they got in comparison to Liverpool. It could have been almost 30 points if they didn't have Kevin De Bruyne. And if you took out possibly Jordan Henderson from Liverpool, I don't think that the margin would be that much. I think you've got to look at Kevin De Bruyne and say, when you see world-class talent like that, you've got to recognise, so he's for me my player of the season.
It is a difficult one, that, because both De Bruyne and Henderson offer so much to their teams. Henderson in probably ways that are slightly more subtle than De Bruyne, in that De Bruyne is getting your goals, getting your assists and coming up with these incredible passes, whereas Henderson kind of gives you that real energy in midfield and that leadership. So it's tough. It depends on what kind of you consider to be the most important attributes for a player to have, isn't it?
It's definitely so. But I just feel with player of the season, you've got to have something else as well. You've got to have something that is so recognisable and brilliant. And I've not seen I probably haven't seen in the history of the Premier League that I've been watching a player that passes a ball so elegantly as him. The players that you're comparing him to are probably like David Beckham and like as Steven Gerrard. And when you're comparing them to those sorts of players, I think you've got to really recognise that he is a really world-class talent.
Benji, who would you say is your player of the season? Would you agree with Dec and say De Bruyne tops it for you?
It has to be KDB for me. I mean, did he break the assist record or did he equal it? Either way, I mean, he's raised his level when a lot of Man City players have dropped their levels and they've been easier to beat. But De Bruyne has been the standout player, definitely. And he's definitely, I would consider him the best player in the league by a mile for the last couple of seasons. It's unfortunate I couldn't give it to a Liverpool player, because I reckon, I mean, they've had the best season by a mile, but just watching De Bruyne tearing us to shreds, and his amazing technique and how he makes it look so easy, I have to give it to him.
Callum, are you in the Kevin De Bruyne fan club as well? Would you say he's been the best player in the league this season?
Yeah, by a mile. Because the problem is with all the Liverpool guys is they all take away from each other. Like Henderson, you're basically going off the handful of games he played at defensive midfield, because the centre midfielder is pretty average for Liverpool. And then you've got all the stuff that I hate, the narrative nonsense about, because it's quite true, it's not that it doesn't matter, but it's people overinflate by miles how much leadership and stuff matters. So it's whatever you think it is, whatever it's really worth, people make it out to be like 600% worth. And that's the cornerstone of why he won the Football Writers Award and stuff like that. And then it's the other guys, it's like no one really stands out enough. But Kevin De Bruyne was the best player. And I'm always wondering who's going to go with the best player. The best player on the pitch is going to get it every time.
I think we're seeing a bit of a running theme here that Kevin De Bruyne might be running away with this one. Out of the lads we yet to ask, Will, Reese and Alex, have you got any other names that you throw into the mix, or is Kevin De Bruyne your winner as well?
Yeah, I think it has to be KDB. I mean, being from Milton Keynes, I'd love to throw in George Bulldog into the mix, but no, probably has to be Kevin De Bruyne. I mean, well, fun fact, he equaled the assist record of Henry's, and you know, both times that a player's hit 20 assists in the league, they finished second, and I think just behind that was Ozil, and he came second. So if you get the most assists, you're not going to win the league, unfortunately. But he is the best player for me.
Yeah, I think there are two truly elite players in the Premier League that I genuinely think are a class above the rest, that would walk into any team in the world that should be in the conversation, sort of top five players in the world. You know, I think that's Virgil van Dijk and Kevin De Bruyne. And this season, to be honest, Kevin De Bruyne has been absolutely phenomenal. You know, Man City, they've had a lot of problems, mostly defensively, but a lot of people haven't really talked about how players like Bernardo Silva haven't performed, and they've actually really underachieved this season. Kevin De Bruyne has just carried them at points, and it's amazing how City went on to win a title last season when De Bruyne was injured for so many parts of it. But he's just he makes it look so easy, which is basically what everyone else is saying. But he's an absolutely phenomenal player. As a Liverpool fan, I would love to give it to a Liverpool player, but ultimately, I just think De Bruyne as an individual is an individual award. And I did first half of the season, I think Fabinho was probably our best player, but I think obviously he would have been in with a shout if he didn't have that injury and that little drop off in form when he came back. So yeah, just got to go to Kevin De Bruyne for me.
And Will, are you? Yeah. Is it De Bruyne all round?
This is the easiest one, I think, with De Bruyne. I can't really add so much to what you said, but what I like about him as well is his defensive work as well is so good, and like it just is. Like how physical he is, putting in tackles and getting back and defending, which you wouldn't really expect from a kind of playmaker as he is, putting in those great crosses, and certainly not something that Ozil did when he got all those assists. But yeah, De Bruyne, just the standout for me, and I don't know if he'll actually win the award, because there's been that massive Henderson bandwagon, but for me, De Bruyne deserves it.
So we have our first, it's a winner all round. Kevin De Bruyne voted for by every one of our panels. So he wins the Player of the Season award. And now we're on probably to what's going to be the most debated and the most contested aspect of our Your End Sport end of season awards. And that is the best 11 of the season. Which 11 players have impressed the most this season? I'm sure this is...
Hang on. What's happened to transfer of the season?
We can do transfer of the season if you want. Yeah, so who would you throw into the mix for that one, Dick?
Danny Ings, by a mile. I've been on his coattails all year for fantasy football. I got him right at the start of the year, and I was thinking to myself, it's going to pay off. And he's got himself upwards of 20 goals in his season for Southampton. It's been an absolute snip that they bought him for. Loads of injury problems that he had at Liverpool. He was plagued with injury. There was a massive hoo-ha for Liverpool to be able to sign him, going through a tribunal. And it just seemed as if all the stuff that they were going through to try and sign Danny Ings for Liverpool and then sending him out to Southampton, you wondered if he would ever recapture any of the form that he had at Burnley. And he's come on leaps and bounds. He's probably doubled his market value. And I think when it comes to the Euros next year,
I think if Gareth Southgate isn't looking at him, then he's got a serious issue with himself, because he should be in there and possibly given the number nine shirt. If Tammy Abraham has only had half of a good season for Chelsea, Danny Ings has had a full brilliant season for Southampton. Got to be sign of the season for me.
Yeah, Danny Ings is certainly got to be up there in the conversation, kind of considering his injury problems as well that he went through at Liverpool to recover and have been so good for Southampton. Speaks volumes about him and also about Hasenhüttl to be able to get the best out of him. Benji, your transfer of the season, mate, who comes out on top in that one for you? We're including both the summer and the January windows in this, by the way.
Definitely Nicolas Pepe. I'm kidding. I agree with Deck on Danny Ings. Like, what a comeback to get over 20 goals this season and finish joint second place in the Golden Boot is amazing, and he's revived his career, so we're all glad to see that. I guess if I had to throw any other player in, this might be a bit controversial given he's been a bit injured, but I'd say Kieran Tierney. I've honestly felt like he's been such a bargain in these last... I love the guy, and he's just amazing, and he's putting in all these great performances, and I think as long as he's not riddled with injuries, we have a very good player on our hands.
Will, you shook your head there at that suggestion. Who's the best transfer of this season for you? Is it not Kieran Tierney?
Well, I'm pretty sure he's barely played all season, so I don't know how he can be
for me,
especially second half. For me, I mean, Danny Ings, what a signing. I was definitely thinking him straight away. But I think a few other ones that you don't really think are new signings. Obviously, Jordan Ayew was on loan first, and then it was made permanent in the summer, only £2 million. You don't really see those kind of bargains anymore with the kind of transfer market as it is. And he's been, I mean, Palace have barely scored any goals all season. He scored 9 of them. So that's been kind of crucial. Same with Raul Jimenez. That was made permanent in the summer. 17 goals for him. And one other person that I mentioned is Alan Saint-Maximin for Newcastle, who I'm going to go for, despite I think Danny Ings is going to win it overall, and I would probably go for that, but just as something a bit different for him. I mean, that Newcastle side, it's just, I mean, they actually spent some money for once. Mike actually spent about 15 million, 18 million maybe for him, and he's kind of lit it up, even when he's, you know, he's not had too great a return on assists and goals, but he has that moment of magic. He excites you know, you don't really see that kind of showboat in stepovers anymore. You know, that kind of what we saw with Ronaldo back in the Prem, that kind of era. And, you know, he's just an enjoyable watch that really, I mean, brightens up a pretty dull Newcastle side. So I'll go for him.
Yeah, defences are definitely scared of him. Even though his return isn't great in terms of goals and assists, he definitely has an impact for Newcastle. Alex, transfer of the season for you?
Yeah, I think Will's made a really good shout there with Saint-Maximin. And James, you make a good point. Like, I think he's only got 3 or 4 goals this season, but it's not reflective of his play. You know, Newcastle United, they're obviously tipped to go down at the start of the season and haven't played particularly well, I'd say, but have done well in the league. And a lot of that's down to Saint-Maximin. He's a really creative player, trickster, just really good all round. I think no one's mentioned him yet. I think, unfortunately, Bruno Fernandes does have to deserve a mention. Obviously, coming in January, a lot of people have been cynical. Obviously, he's taken a lot of penalties. He seems to go to ground quite easily. But he has transformed Man United for the better. There's no doubt about it. And I'm genuinely scared of him as a Liverpool fan. So I think he has to be in there. You know, Man United, first half of the season, nowhere near the top four, and they finished third, which does deserve some respect. And Danny Ings as well. I've always found he's the kind of player that was suited to a mid-table club. That's no disrespect to him, but, you know, he's not going to get the game time that he would have wanted at Liverpool, and he was unlucky with injuries, but he's been absolutely brilliant at Southampton, and Deck's absolutely right. Needs to, if he's fit, you know, based off this season, he needs to be in the Euro squad next year, because just as a pure finisher, his instincts are absolutely brilliant.
Callum, who for you has been the signing of the season?
Yeah, I thought my Danny Ings pick was going to be unpopular, but yes, yeah, so I say Danny Ings. He got the important thing is he got the most, even though he got the most non-penalty goals. So that's the thing. If you take out Jamie Vardy's penalty goals, he's better than him. but he also did loads of pressing, creative work. He was the focal point of that recovery. It all started clicking in part when he came back. And then a certain amount of touch. He's a local boy. He's from Windsor. So he's basically from down the road from Southampton. So he really did. If the Euros had been this summer, he should have been starting up front for England. But then, yeah. But then, so as other ones mentioned, United's best transfer was not Bruno Fernandes. It was Aaron Wan-Bissaka. You look at, if you watch United games, no one attacked on the left. They just sort of like, okay, we're going to sacrifice our left winger to Aaron Wan-Bissaka and attack everywhere else. No one else does that in the world. And that was the big difference in United's defence getting better. So yeah, 50 million. He basically killed a player every game. There's no one else to do that.
I think Wan-Bissaka has got kind of unfair. Well,
because
with the ball at his feet, he can be a little bit clunky, and it's
even that is brilliant. Season.
Yeah,
but it's the classic defensive player problem where he's so good because he doesn't have to do anything. Because he's so good, people are scared to put the ball near him. So it means that you never see him do much.
Yeah.
You never see him show up on the highlights or anything like that because it's just like, yeah. Our left side is gone now. That doesn't exist. Our left wing is gone. Sorry, mate. Next week. Better luck next week.
It does feel like Danny Ings comes out on top there, but it does feel a lifetime ago since the likes of Wan-Bissaka, Maguire joined Man United because, it's nearly a year ago that those transfers took place. It's such a strange time in which we live in. Reece, does Danny Ings top it for you as well?
I mean, you have to, really. It's very rare that a player in a sort of mid-table team is really up there in the golden boot race. And it is nice to see when that does happen. I'm trying to think of a previous time that's happened. And the only time I can think of, at the top of my head, is Darren Bent for Sunderland. That was over 10 years ago. So you do have to respect the goal-scoring prowess.
Yes. So Danny Ings is the man who comes out on top there with four votes. The only other name that I was going to throw into the mix, and people will be thinking of having a West Ham loving at the minute, the only one that I would throw in perhaps would be Jarrod Bowen. Because at West Ham, he has, got some assists, got some goals to try and turn their fortunes around. Him and Souček have been good signings in January for the Hammers. But Danny Ings wins that one, and comfortably so. So now we are on to the best 11, or as I like to put it, the 11 in which we try and get as few Liverpool players in as possible. Let's start from the back. Let's start between the sticks. Goalkeeper, there's a few names in the conversation for this one. Will, who's your goalkeeper in the team of the season?
It's Nick Pope. It was very unlucky that he didn't get the Golden Glove in the end. I think he lost by one to Edison the final day. But just as a player, I was a bit, a few seasons ago when he came in and replaced Tom Eaton, and they went and shipped Tom Eaton off and put Nick Pope straight in there. I was a bit sceptical about that, but he's kind of proved it. That defensive unit and him at the back seems so safe for a team of Burnley's kind of size. And, there's no wonder I've seen Chelsea being linked with him to replace, Kepa, who's not great. But I think for me, I think Nick Pope deserves his spot in the side. Obviously you got maybe Henderson as the other, both English keepers maybe going for it, and obviously the Edisons and Allisons, but I go Nick Pope as kind of a smaller side, having more importance to his team.
Okay, Nick Pope is Will's shout. Anyone in agreement with Will?
And I agree. Yeah. Absolutely.
So we've got three in support of Nick Pope. Deck and Callum, you didn't nod your heads for that one. I'm going to go for Callum first. Who's the goalkeeper that you're going for?
Well, the thing for me with Pope is that he's system keeper. You look at Burnley every year, whoever it is, they magic them into being a good keeper, except Joe Hart. Everyone except Joe Hart can be a good keeper at Burnley. So that's why it wouldn't be him. But it's probably Edison, because he did a really good job considering how having to shift Fernandinho either out of the lineup of being injured or back in centre-back, how that made them more precarious defensively. He did a really good job there. And of course, he was right up there in terms of, actual shot stopping and then the ability he gives you the ball at his feet. So he was a better shot stopper than most of your other options. And he's the best keeper of the ball at his feet in the world. So it's then a lot of his team, So when you've got, you had ones like Pope, even Alisson, if you're naming them, they're basically products of the system in a lot of ways. In terms of the actual keeping, it's because their defence suppressed so many shots with Burnley. They get so many bodies in front of shots, so it means it's relatively easy for keepers, not named Joe Hart.
Okay, so Edison is Callum Shout. Deck, who was the goalkeeper that you went for?
Rodrigo at West Ham. No. I was thinking that Alisson would have been in if he hadn't have got himself injured right at the start of the year. He was out for about 6 or 8 games, and he probably would have won the Golden Glove if it wasn't for that injury that he picked up at the start of the year. Alas, you've got to give it to probably what I would assume is the best player in between the sticks, and it's got to be Dean Henderson. Dean Henderson is probably going to be turning back up to Old Trafford, and he's going to be saying to Solskjaer, I'm probably the guy that you need to be looking at going forward, because David De Gea is not getting any better. In fact, he's getting much, much worse very, very quickly. And if you're anyone who can probably displace what was one of the best goalkeepers of the last 10 years, if not the best goalkeeper of the last 10 years in the Premier League, you've got to be very, very good. Either that, or you probably think David De Gea is really, really poor. Where you probably think on that spectrum is probably where you probably think either Dean Henderson's the best keeper or Nick Pope. But I'm going to say Henderson. His goalkeeping prowess is brilliant. I think he could be probably the player going forward for England, could be the England number one. Definitely should get Jordan Pickford out of the side. But Dean Henderson, for me, has got to be the best keeper. But I can understand where they're coming from for Nick Pope, and he's probably a deserving winner as well.
Yeah, Henderson was my shout as well, Dick. But Nick Pope is the man who comes out on top, 3 votes out of 6. So he is victorious for that number one spot. Now, before we go on to the rest of our team, the next 10 players, I just wanted to ask, kind of in terms of formations, what are people going with? Are you happy for a good old fashioned 4-4-2, or is it going to be a 4-1? 4-1. Actually, how do I work it? 4-3-2-1 formation. I was getting lost a bit there. How
4-1-2-3? You mean?
Yeah, 4-1-2-3. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Since the world, the champions of the world are the teams that they play 4-3-3. I don't think anyone can disagree with the fact.
Well,
that
I mean, they play 4-1-2-3, but Fabinho plays as the defensive midfielder, hence the defensive midfielder. Like, okay. It's a nomenclature thing, but either it's worse. I say that because it's the one which most teams use. So it makes sense.
If we go for that, I would like a bit of leniency in terms of putting a striker out on the wing, because I want to have 2 strikers in the team. So
okay,
that's a bit of leniency.
Okay, so
we need to bring like 3 midfielders in too, because there's definitely names that just need to be in there. So yeah.
Okay, we'll go 4-3-3 then. Let's do the back four then. We'll start at right back. I imagine that there's one name in the mix for this. So. Alexander Arnold, who's gone for him at right back?
Got to be in there for me.
Yeah, Alexander Arnold.
Got to mention Wan-Bissaka, of course, but
Wan-Bissaka's a shout.
Got to mention him, but he's the best traditional right back, because Trent basically plays right midfield most of the time. But if we're talking about where they're put on the team sheet, it's only got to be Alexander Arnold. So it's got to mention Wan-Bissaka, because he's the best right back, traditional right back, but it's not the name of the game.
I also think if you look at the statistics of someone like Ricardo Pereira at Leicester, when he's been out of the Leicester team, they've really struggled without him. And he did have a great season up until his injury for them. But I think Alexander-Arnold comes out on top. Alex, why has he been the outstanding right-back in the Premier League this season, would you say?
Well, he's just so instrumental to the way we play. I was asked by someone who I prefer, or who I think is the better player out of Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andy Robertson as a fullback. And I said, like, I love Andy Robertson, but it's clear that naturally he's not as gifted as Trent. You know, like Robertson, a lot of his skills have been developed, and as a player, he's developed a lot by Klopp. But I think with Trent, it's just so much natural talent. You know, I could see him transitioning into midfield into the future. Obviously, like the way he plays, he takes risks defensively, but I think when he has to be defensive too, he's actually quite underrated as a defender. So yeah, you know, he's integral to everything we do, integral to our set pieces, integral to goal creation. So I think he just has to be it for me.
Yeah, Alexander-Arnold getting in there at right back. Now, our 2 centre-backs, again, I imagine one kind of picks itself. in Virgil van Dijk, who has been outstanding for Liverpool this season. Are people in agreement with that, that he takes one of the spots? Yeah?
Got to be, yeah.
And, okay, so the next centre-back option, I think, is up for debate because, of course, Sheffield United, with their three overlapping centre-backs, that's been of great success for them this season. The likes of John Egan have really stood out. You can make a case for others. I've seen lots of praise for Harry Maguire at Manchester United this season, which I have to admit I'm a little bit questionable of. The Leicester centre-backs, Evans and Sonchu, have been good for the most part, although since they've come back after lockdown, they seem a little bit looser than they were before. What centre-back options have we gone with then? Reece, I'll turn to you first. Who squeezes into that back four for you?
Yeah, I would like to shout out the Sheffield United centre-backs before I reveal my pick. The other day I was watching like the best League One playoff semi-finals or something, and I was just a bit bored. And I saw that Chris Basham was scoring in a 7-6 aggregate defeat to Swindon Town, and he's now playing in the Premier League with them. So, yeah, what a journey he's been on. He's been great, but my pick has to be Soyuncu. I know he's been a bit ropey since, lockdown, and obviously got himself a stupid three-match ban. But for the most part of the season, especially when Leicester were flying, he's been an incredible replacement for Harry Maguire. And I think him and Virgil at centre-back, absolute brick wall.
Yeah, I don't think there's much getting past that partnership. Callum, who have you gone for as your other centre-back?
For me, it's James Tarkowski. Played every minute, and I'd give him more credit for Burnley's conceded record than Pope in loss. He's the person who is the cornerstone of that defence. He's what it's all built around. He can do more than he shows there. He's pretty decent with ball at his feet, as he showed at Brentford, but he is impenetrable. He's a really big man, and he uses that size to block a lot of shots. He heads everything that comes near him. He is one of the better centre backs just in the league. He's better than Harry Maguire, for example. But it's quite serious. So, actually, yeah, it's a good shout for me as well. But I would say Tarkowski, but because it's worth with team of the season, I'm looking at minutes as one of the first things. So when a guy plays every single minute, he's gonna have a leg up on a lot of the competition.
So Tarkowski gets in for Callum. Deck, who's your other centre-back option?
It's tricky, really, because it's hard because at the midway point of the season, I said that if Leicester aren't going to win the awards of the least amount of goals against, then they must have done something really, really bad, and they have had a very, very poor second half of the season for me. So it's really hard to pick somebody really that stands out for a whole of the season other than the players who we've already mentioned. But I'm going to go with my Liverpool roots, Joe Gomez. He's got to be in there for me. Joe Gomez is, other than the worst performance in a Liverpool shirt against Manchester City, I think he is by far England's best centre-half, above Harry Maguire or Curran Forbes. I think that Joe Gomez is a future potential captain for England. I think he's got some leadership qualities that once Virgil van Dijk is outside of Liverpool, I think he'll grow into the role and could potentially be vice-captain for Liverpool. I think Joe Gomez, of the whole season, I would say that he's been the most consistent. And it really goes with the territory, being the fact that Liverpool have been the most consistent team this season. If it wasn't for Soyuncu being a bit foolish in the second half of the year, he would have been a shoo-in. But got to go for the lads who's been more of a 7 or 8 out of 10 week in, week out than the rest. So Gomez for me.
I think Gomez is one of those Liverpool players who's impact on the team this season has been a little bit underrated. Of course, the fullbacks get a lot of praise in the front three, and rightly so, but Gomez has been absolutely outstanding for Liverpool, so definitely a great shout from Det. So we've had Tarkowski, Sonchu and Gomez so far as suggestions for that left-sided centre-back. Will, is your shout any of those three names, or have you got someone else to throw into the mix?
I wouldn't have had Van Dijk in the first place. I think, on the ball he's all right, but defensively he's not there. I had Soyuncu in there, but his second half of the season, and especially that red card, it cost Leicester big time. So I'm going to have to go for one of the Sheffield United boys. And if I'm honest, you know, you can't really, not much to pick between them all doing a good job. But I've gone for John Egan, just because he got a few goals towards the end of the season. And I mean, he should have scored quite a few more in the season, to be honest. But he got a few more goals. And, you know, I had to have one of the Sheffield United centre backs representing in my team. So I've gone for him.
Alex, what about you?
I was stuck between three, really. I agree with Will. Sheffield United centre-back simply has to be in there for me. So I am leaning towards one of those guys. Initially went for Jack O'Connell. From what I've seen him, he seems really impressive. But I think there's an argument for either him or Egan. The other names that I thought about putting Sorensen there, but he has dropped off a bit. That suspension hasn't helped. There have been a few inconsistencies in his game. But, you know, there is a really capable player there. So when I was stuck between Evans and Sorensen, even though Evans is a really, really underrated player, I think Sorensen has the higher ceiling and has been better this season. And the third name that came to mind was actually Liverpool alumni Connor Cody. Wolves. I think, you know, I don't think he gets the attention in that side, which is probably fair enough. There's so much forward talent. And obviously he gets a bit more help because he's in a back three. And that's the case for Sheffield United as well. But I've really liked the look of him. I've liked the look of him this season. But I think on balance, I'll go for O'Connell just because I think Sheffield United's, they need to be really well respected for that defence. And Wolves and Leicester, I'd say, have improved defensively this season, but they're generally attacking teams. I think Sheffield United have been really built on that defence. So I'll go for Jack O'Connell.
So Jack O'Connell is Alex's shout. So we had quite a few names thrown into the mix for this one. But so we've had Tarkowski, Sonchu, Gomez, John Egan and Jack O'Connell. In my team of the season, I did go for John Egan. So he slips in to that second centre-back spot. So far, our team of the season consists of Nick Pope, Trent Alexander-Arnold at right-back, Virgil van Dijk and John Egan as the centre-backs. And plenty more positions to be filled in. Okay, so left back is the next position that's up for grabs in our team of the season. Is this again another position, lads, that picks itself? Has anyone gone for anyone other than Andy Robertson here?
No,
Robertson. Alex, you gave a wave there. Who do you think is in the conversation?
It was a kind of umming and ahhing signal. I think on balance it does go to Robertson. I think probably the only player who gets close to him is probably Ben Chilwell at Leicester. Obviously, he was a bit unlucky at the end of the season with injury, but he's a player that I really rate. From an England perspective, you know, we're really low in the left-back department, and I think Ben Chilwell fills that role perfectly, to be honest. And, you know, he's being linked with a major money move to Chelsea or Manchester City, and I think he's a very well-balanced defender, good going forward, a decent defender. I think Robertson, other than playing as if he was still hungover against Man City, has to probably go in just based on his assist output.
So Robertson looks like he's got that left back spot sorted. Dec, on Andy Robertson, I remember having a conversation with you towards the start of the season, and you were saying about Liverpool's performances in terms of individual displays. I remember you saying something along the lines of, a lot of these players played better last season than they did this season, but you kind of just had that momentum of winning games, etc., and that kind of carried you home. Is Robertson an exception from that? Has his performance levels increased this season, or did he set such a high standard last season that even though it's kind of dropped slightly this year, it's still been of a good enough quality?
It's a very good question.
I'm full of them, Dec. I'm a great host.
I do think that it's funny with Andy Robertson, because his second half of the season hasn't been as fortuitous as the first half. Now, you can say, obviously, the lockdown and the restart has got to play its part in that respect. But I think that with Andy Robertson, from the whole of 2019, from last season, Champions League, all the way up until Christmas, I would say 2019 was incredible for Andy Robertson. I don't think he could have put in any more effort into any of them games. This 2020 hasn't been as good for him, and I do feel for him, like a lot of the players at Liverpool, like and a lot of the players in the Premier League. It's very hard to go from
playing week in, week out, to just stopping and then restarting so quickly and a quick turnaround. Andy Robertson, he had a very good start of the year. And he was putting in some world-class performances. I don't think I have to be bashful in saying that. He was incredible, probably the Europe's best left-back. Is he Europe's best left-back right now? I'm not sure about that. But he's got to be in the Premier League team of the year for me, because he has been the best left-back in the Premier League. Alex very, very well put that Ben Chilwell has had a very good season. But on the balance, I would say that Leicester have had a very, very poor second half of the season. Although Andy Robertson hasn't had a very good second half of the season, he's had a very much better second half of the season than Ben Chilwell. As for Robertson, though, I mean, there's no doubt about it that you can see the talent that he's got. His crossing ability is absolutely world class, and he's got to be in the side.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The only other name that I think you could perhaps throw into the conversation, who's had a very good season at left-back for Burnley, is Charlie Taylor. He's had a good season, and I actually think he's probably even better than Chilwell personally. But yeah, Robertson gets in there now for our team and completes our back four of Alexander-Arnold, Van Dijk, John Egan and Andrew Robertson at left-back. Okay, so the midfield three, that's the formation that we went with. Let's kind of go through the three players that we've chosen in midfield all at once, shall we? Will, which three players get into the middle of the pitch for you?
I'm looking at it now, and it's not looking too balanced, because I've had to have a little switch with the middle three, but it's De Bruyne, obviously, Kovacic, and Jack Grealish, which is... It's an interesting balance. Not sure it would work in an actual side. But I think, obviously, De Bruyne, that sort of speaks for itself. Grealish, in that Villa side, he's basically pretty much kept them up on his own, carrying the side through that team. Because, I mean, after McGinn got injured, he was the only one really with anything about him. And Kovacic, I think, when he first signed, I thought he was a bit of a nothing player. But I've... he had the red card, obviously, in the FA Cup final, which was harsh. But just in terms of his tidy play, getting forward, taking men on, I think he's really helped out that Chelsea midfield that's been a bit kind of inexperienced with their players. So that's my midfield three. I think Jordan Henderson's just not done enough to get in there.
Oh, interesting midfield three then for Will. Kovacic, De Bruyne and Jack Grealish. Reece? Which three midfielders get into your midfield?
Yeah, I'm going to have to put Fabinho in there. He's been just class for Liverpool. De Bruyne, of course. And yeah, similar to Will, Jack Grealish, just in terms of a player that's, you know, in terms of players that have had such an impact on one team's fortunes, you know, you can't look any further than Jack Grealish. Villa probably would have come bottom without him. You know, in terms of just grabbing games by scruff the neck and just really dragging up the performances of his own teammates as well, at certain points, you have to chuck him in there. Of course, De Bruyne, you know, we've already spoke about him as player of the season, so of course he gets in the team of the season. And then Fabinho has just given that Liverpool midfield so much balance and... you know, snuffing out opposition attacks, and he's come up with some nice goals as well, and he's been a really important part of that team. So yeah, my three: Fabinho, De Bruyne and Grealish.
Interesting three that you've gone for there, Reece. Fabinho, De Bruyne and Grealish getting in. Grealish twice then, one of the picks for our panel in the midfield. Callum, do you support that? Is Jack Grealish getting into your midfield? And if not, who are the three that you've gone with?
For me, with Grealish, would be eligibility, where he played half the season at left wing, so I don't really want to count him for that. It's similar to how I wouldn't have Fabinho, because he only played 22 games. So it's that sort of thing. And it's the problem with Henderson, where for half the season, when he was playing as well as centre mid as opposed to the holding mid, he wasn't really doing much, because it's that thing where Liverpool don't ask their midfield to do anything but shuttle the ball around the defend and all that. So it's Henderson is one where it's, if either him or Fabinho had been playing that holder the whole year, I probably have one of them in there, but it's sort of, they take away from each other is my problem. But I mean, the two that are nailed on for me are Kevin De Bruyne, obviously, and James Ward-Prowse. Played
every single minute of the season for Southampton, was so key to them that Hasn't it was like, okay, we have to get you in the side somehow. We'll play it right back for a couple of games. And he chips in with the set pieces, and he really did a lot of work as one of those sixes for them, as they call them. But, and so then the third one, I'd say probably just if we're going with guys, if we're going with guys who played 22 games there, I'm going to say David Silva. Because David Silva, in his last year in the Premier League, showed he's still got that quality that he's had for the past decade. Going all the way back to when he was at Valencia and scored a 1-2 goal against Chelsea from the left wing. Going from a left winger to one of the best, to still holding his way as a central midfielder in 2020. And because it's the last time I can pick him, it's like, in fact, I'm glad I'm in there because it's the last time I could have it. I'm just going to have David Silva in there because if you can have a left winger in there or a guy who played 22 games at them, why not have a better guy who played 22 games?
Definitely worth a mention, Ward-Prowse, because he has been outstanding for Southampton this season. He feels like someone that has been in the conversation. You know, Arsenal have wanted him, Tottenham have wanted him for years, and I think in recent seasons he's really excelled. And David Silva again. And I think sometimes when a player who's been so integral in the Premier League era, I think sometimes he can get into these teams based on sentimentality, but Silva definitely still has a massive impact upon that Manchester City team. So he gets into that midfield for you. Dec, which three midfielders have you gone for?
Well, it should be no surprise that, you know, I definitely disagree with what some of these lads have said. The fact that anyone can put Birmingham's answer to Joey Essex and Jack Grealish in the sides is absolutely ridiculous. So he's not going to be in there for me. Fabinho has got to be in the side, despite the fact that Callum said that he's only played 20 games. He's been the best defensive midfielder in the Premier League. Then you've got to have Jordan Henderson. He's integral to Liverpool, the way that they set up these days. When he doesn't play, you've seen in the last few games, when Henderson isn't in the side, they don't gel as well. So he's got to be in there for me. And then Kevin De Bruyne, he's the player of the year for me. So, and he's got to be in the side. So that is my midfield three. And I definitely know Jack Grealish in sight for me. He's the most overrated player in the Premier League. Quote me on that.
Jez has joined us. Mr. Jeremy Jun has entered the fray. Our team, at the minute, we're on to our midfield three, Jez. Which three players for you get into your centre midfield? We've had lots of debate. Jack Grealish was kind of a shoo-in for the first two of our panel that we asked. James Ward-Prowse and David Silva have come into the debate. And Dec has gone with a Liverpool-heavy midfielder, Fabinho, Henderson, alongside Kevin De Bruyne. So which three players get into the middle for you?
Kevin De Bruyne, obviously. I don't think that there needs to be a case made for me. He's the player of the season, quite simply. I agree with Dec in that I think I would put Henderson in there. I think he has actually been integral to Liverpool, and he offers a bit more of a two-way, I'm thinking functional as well as sort of performance. And CDM, I'm going with Wilfred Ndidi. If you take Wilfred Ndidi out of Leicester, we've seen what happens with Leicester. They fall off a cliff. He was the reason that they had their mid-season collapse. It wasn't. He was the only player that was out outside. Then they got Maddison injured. But if you take Ndidi out, that Leicester side is a completely different animal. I mean, Dex said that Fabinho is the best CDM in the league. I won't dispute that, but I think Ndidi is the most important CDM in the league, because we've seen what Liverpool are like when Fabinho's out. Henderson can play there perfectly well, and I don't think that's much of a loss in comparison to, you take Ndidi out, you're going to have to put Hamza Choudhury in there, and there that is basically going from a Ferrari to a Fiat.
It's a big drop. And
yeah,
interestingly enough, Jez, that midfield three that you went with is exactly the same as what I went with. Ndidi, Henderson and De Bruyne were my midfield three. Alex, have you got any other names to throw into the mix, or have you gone with a combination of what we've suggested so far?
It's pretty much a combination. KDB, we've talked about him loads today, has to be in there. I put one Liverpool midfielder in, and I'm stuck between putting Henderson in, Fabinho in, or Genie Wijnaldum, actually. I know Wijnaldum's been poor since the return of football, but I think people have discredited the fact that he was really important to us in the first sort of 6-7 months of the season. I've gone for Henderson just because of the consistency, and we've seen with him, you've got to really consider, if Fabinho and Wijnaldum aren't in the side, it doesn't affect us too much, but there is a drop-off when Henderson isn't in the side, and that happened against Atletico Madrid, that happened against Watford, it's happening against a couple of other teams. So I think he's got to be in there. I thought about James Ward-Prowse or Pierre Højbjerg as the third option, but I ended up going for Mateo Kovacic, just because I think Chelsea's team have just been generally so inconsistent. There's been so many changes to the lineup, changes of style, changes of, changes of personnel. And I think Mateo Kovacic has kind of been the one constant in the whole Chelsea team, let alone their midfield, of a player that's just genuinely been really, really good week in, week out. And I think he's the perfect kind of number eight box-to-box midfielder. So I've gone for Kovacic as my third option, but it was close between Kovacic and Ward-Prowse.
Yeah, definitely. Kovacic is someone that has certainly stood out for Chelsea this season. And he gets into your midfield alongside Will's midfield as well. So the midfield options, as I try and do the maths for this, Kevin De Bruyne is a shoo-in. He gets into everybody's midfield. He was our player of the season, so he slots into midfield. Jordan Henderson, out of the seven of us, appears four times, so he gets into the midfield as well. And in terms of the final option, so we've got Jack Grealish's name comes into the conversation twice, Kovacic comes into the conversation twice, and Ndidi comes into the conversation twice as well. So out of Kovacic, Grealish, and Ndidi, do you know what? I'm going to turn to Dec, because you didn't choose any of those three midfielders, so you get the casting vote for this one. Who are you going to go with?
Well, it's not Jack Grealish, so it's two of you lads need to put you. Yeah, sorry about that. So it was either Wilfred Ndidi or what was the other one?
Kovacic.
Oh, it's got to be Kovacic for me. I think the way that he's made himself known in that Chelsea side. When I think I agree with what Will said, when they first signed Kovacic, I really didn't think that much of him. But the season that he's had, he's been very, very consistent. And he's really gelled them together in the midfield. He's been surprisingly good for me. So, yeah, I think out of those three lads, Kovacic.
Kovacic gets in. So our midfield is complete. Kevin De Bruyne alongside Jordan Henderson and Kovacic completes the centre of midfield. And now it is time for the front three, which is always the most exciting part of a best 11. The goals at the top end of the pitch. Who's going to get in? It's surely up for grabs. Lots of players in the conversation for this one. Callum, I'll turn to you first. Which three attacking players get into that region of the pitch for you?
From right to left or left to right?
Right to left, please.
Right to left would be Mo Salah. You've got 19 and 10, led Liverpool scoring. You know. Danny Ings, just copy and paste everything I said about the transfer of the season to this. He's got the most non-penalty goals. He did loads of other stuff too. It wasn't just a poacher like Jamie Vardy. And on the left wing, it would be Raheem Sterling. Got 20 goals. Basically was a lot of City's attack for a lot of the season, with Aguero being injured and Jesus continuing to be slightly underwhelming. So it's Raheem Sterling for the other one for me.
Reese, who's in your front three?
I'm going to be a bit boring and just go for who's been contributing the most goals. On the left, I'm going to have Aubameyang, because that is how Arteta has used him, out on the left as opposed to through the middle. It's a bit biased there, but he has been extremely important. We probably would have got relegated without him. through the middle has to be Danny Ings, similar to Callum. He's just been excellent. All kinds of goals, absolutely cracking player. And then on the right as well, has to be Salah, He's been unbelievable for the last few years, and he's been brilliant once again. So yeah, quite boring, really. So Aubameyang, Ings and Salah for me.
Jez, are you supportive of that front three, or have you got a few other names to throw into it?
Just wondering what I'll say coming back to me at the end. Danny Ings is in. I think he's the most complete number nine this season in terms of goals and assists, in terms of what he's offered. One of the Liverpool wingers makes it in. I'm just tossing it over in my mind as to which one of them does. It's either Mo or it's Mane. Yeah, for his goals against Everton.
It pushed him in there.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go with the majority and go with Salah just because of his impact. I mean, Mane does have the ability to change a game every now and again, but he is what you kind of want from a left winger for scrappiness. But I'm going to go with, I think I'm going to go with Mo. And then on the left, I'm tempted by Aubameyang, but you know what? I think because he was for a long time the only good thing in what was an appalling half season for a dreadful team and literally carried them on his back until it broke, I'm going to go with Marcus Rashford.
Okay. Interesting shout. Rashford gets in into Jez's starting 11. Will, what about your front three, mate? Who are you going to go with?
On the right, I've gone for Adama Traore.
Ooh, okay.
A player who, I mean, if I'm honest, before this season, I always just said he was awful because the goal contributions, it was like one goal, one assist in 50 games or something like that. And he was just a pace merchant. But he's actually now learnt how to use his pace. And I mean, Nuno started bringing him off the bench after about 70 minutes. And I think there was definitely at least three times at the end of the season where he's got on and got the assist for Jimenez in like a 1-0 win. And he's just, that pace, it just makes defenders scared, especially coming on late. And he started to score a few bangers as well. So he's getting his goal contributions up. So I've gone for him there. Up front, Danny Ings. Yeah, just, we all said it, you know, as a not a big team to come so close to win the Golden Boot. He's got to be up there as a striker. And the left wing, as I said earlier about, I would have actually had like a two up front. So I'm going to have to squeeze Jamie Vardy out onto the left wing. I think he's the oldest player to ever win the Golden Boot, I think it is. And obviously, Leicester, you know, they're not an awful side, they're not, you know, the big sides. And to score those goals, the way, kind of just when he's in on goal, it seems like all he does is smash it, but it always goes in. So I think Jamie Vardy, especially the way he works the back line as well, with quite a bit of pace himself, I'll go for him on the left. The Liverpool wingers just haven't done enough for me all season.
I'm sure the next person I'm going to turn to will disagree with that. Deck, who's in your starting 11 when it comes to the front three?
You know, I never rated Will as a pundit. You know, I always thought that he was rubbish. So it's got to be the Liverpool wingers. I mean, everyone's been saying you've got to choose between the two, but I think it's like choosing your Kardashian. It's Courtney, by the way. So I would say that you've got to go for Sadio Mane and Mo Salah have got to be in the side for me. And then up front, everyone's already said it with Danny Ings. He's the best number nine out of the strikers in the Premier League this season. But Sadio Mane was almost there for player of the season for me. I think he didn't really have enough goals maybe to his name. And as for Mo Salah, you know, his numbers sort of speak for himself. He's going to keep on racking up the goals for Liverpool. Hopefully we still value him as a footballer. I know that some Liverpool supporters want to sell him. I'm definitely not in that camp. And Danny Ings, like I said, his value is only going to go up at Southampton. And he should be England's number nine. So that is my front three, two Liverpool wingers. So hopefully that doesn't look too biased.
Alex, are you in the same mindset as Deck? Do the Liverpool wingers get in for you?
Only one of them actually got in for me. I've gone for Mo Salah on the right wing. I think it had to be either him. Traore is probably a close second. I've really enjoyed watching him this season. But Salah, I think, is still probably one of the most underappreciated players in the world. And that includes by his own fans. Yeah, Deck was talking about fans wanting to sell him. Like, he's just so good, you know. Got close to another Golden Boot this season. I feel like when assessing the front three, when you think of the three of them at their best, when Salah's at his best, he's better than the other two. Although Mane has moments of consistency, Salah's the better natural goal scorer. I think he's a better dribbler. So I have to put Salah in there. Number nine striker, I've gone for Danny Ings. Pretty easy decision. I mean, there was an argument for Jamie Vardy as well, but I've gone for Ings just because of the team he's come from, the way he's led the press and stuff. And left wing was a really difficult one. For some reason, when I was first asked, my mind jumped to Harvey Barnes, of all people, which obviously can't go in. I have genuinely really liked watching him this season. I think he's really underrated. But then there's just no way I could put Harvey Barnes in. over Mane, Sterling, Aubameyang. So I had to get that thought out of my head pretty quickly. But I did want to give him a mention. I've gone for Aubameyang, so I think that's the same lineup that Reece went for up front. Just have to, I respect him a lot for the way he's carried Arsenal. There's no way, you know, there's no way we'd know how well Arsenal are doing or how well Arsenal would do without Aubameyang this season. He's been absolutely integral. I think naturally he's probably the best finisher in the Premier League, and he's probably the most vital player to the team in the whole Premier League. So it's got to be Aubameyang on the left wing for me.
Okay, so if I do the maths correctly, Mo Salah features in four of the teams that we've four of our suggestions so far. Danny Ings features in all of them, and Aubameyang is in two. We've got Rashford, Sterling, and Mane appearing on one occasion. In terms of my front three that I went with, I went for Sadio Mane on the left wing because he is the one that, well, they all frighten me to death, but he's the one that frightens me the most. Danny Ings up front because I think he's been absolutely outstanding. And again, you're going to think of my weird West Ham bias, but the one I've gone with on the right-hand side is Mikel Antonio because of the amount of goals he scored for West Ham since the restart has more or less kept them up in the Premier League this season. The four goals he scored against Norwich, goals against Chelsea, a penalty away at Man United. He's been absolutely superb since the restart. And whilst he's been played as a centre-forward, his natural position is on the right wing. Jez, I'm going to give you the casting vote here. So example of names that we've got in the conversation. Sterling, Aubameyang, Rashford, Traore, Mane and Antonio. Who gets in on the wing for you? You've got the final call. On the left wing, this is.
Sorry, so it was Sterling, Aubameyang,
Mane and Mikel Antonio, obviously. Or Harvey Barnes, if you want to.
I think it's between Aubameyang and Mane then in that case, because Sterling, since 2022, the restart was appalling, which everyone does seem to forget about. When he came back from restart, he was absolutely on fire. But throughout all of 2020, I think it took him until basically the last game week pre-restart to get a goal contribution. He couldn't help, you know, it was more the Raheem Sterling we as England fans liked to have a go at beforehand, before he became good again. As much as I want to say Mane, I do agree with what Alex said. The thing with Mane is he is always for your regular 7 to 8 out of 10. But Mo is the guy that gives you the nine to ten out of ten. And Aubameyang has done what Aubameyang has done in an appalling Arsenal side. And that's why, you know, if I'm going off a similar logic that I sort of went with Rashford, then I'm going to go with Aubameyang.
Okay, so Aubameyang gets in on our left wing. And that completes the Euron Sports Best 11 for the 2019-2020 season. It reads as follows. Nick Pope in goal. Trent Alexander-Arnold at right back. Virgil van Dijk and John Egan at centre-back with Andy Robertson at left-back. A midfield three of Kevin De Bruyne, Henderson and Kovacic, and a front three of Salah, Ings and Aubameyang. I think even Everton would struggle to beat that. A brilliant team. It's got a bit of everything, that one, to be fair. I think whilst there was some debate, there are a couple of positions which kind of picked themselves, and the areas which were up for grabs, I think we can all agree. At the end of the day, is a good team and a fair reflection on how the 2019-2020 season has gone. So that is it. If we just run through our awards once more, the manager of the season went to Sheffield United's Chris Wilder. The moment of the season was Liverpool's victory over Manchester City. Goal of the season went to Jordan Ayew, his individual stunner against West Ham United. Player of the season was Kevin De Bruyne. Transfer of the season was Danny Ings, his permanent deal from Liverpool to Southampton. And like I said, our best 11. Has picked itself, and Jack Grealish, who looked like a shoo-in initially, has been cast out by Deck. His Grealish agenda has seen him miss out. But that is it for our end of season awards, and my big thanks to Reece, Alex, Callum, Will, Jez and Deck, and to Benji for joining us earlier. We hope to be back in a few weeks' time. Sooner than that, hopefully. We will try and do some more comedy awards, I think, based on how this season has gone. And potentially there could be a Premier League quiz to come as well. So thank you very much for listening, and we hope to see you again soon. That's all, folks.